Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features unpacking the DR Congo Rwanda US Accords. Africa Now is next. Welcome to the show. I'm Moise Muntali. The music in the background is Independence Cha-Cha by Grand Kali. Last week on December 4, 2025, President Tshisekedi of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, and President Paul Kagame of Rwanda reaffirmed the peace agreement of June 27, 2025 in Washington, D.C. to end the conflict in eastern DRC. This was part of the Washington Accords, which featured 1. Reaffirming the June 27 peace agreement, 2. Agreement on the regional integration framework between the DRC and Rwanda, 3. Bilateral agreement between the United States and Rwanda focusing on health, and 4. Strategic bilateral partnership between the DRC and the U.S. Gambale Musabuli unpacks and contextualizes the accords, history of the conflict, the real nature of the agreements, the missing issue of justice for Congolese people in the agreements, the continued external destabilization by the U.S. and other Western countries, the continued neocolonial role of multinational corporations who are exploiting the DRC's vast mineral resources, the massive loss of life, and more. Gambale Musabuli is an analyst at the Center for Research on the Congo, Kinshasa. He is a human rights advocate and is one of the leading political and cultural Congolese voices. First, you'll hear journalist Akilimale Chomachoma in Kinshasa providing an update on the current situation in the DRC. This was from the Friends of the Congo webinar yesterday, December 9, 2025, entitled Trump's Mineral Deal with Congo, What Happened? Here is Akilimale Chomachoma.
The point is that after the signing of the agreement from Washington, as they said, as they call it a peace deal, the President Tshisekedi did yesterday a meeting with in front of a member of the Senate and the National Assembly, which is in U.S., the House of Representatives, to say about how the nation is going on. And he had some time to speak about about this agreement. And on that agreement, he said that for him, that agreement is something which is really good and which will help the country. But he said that from his point of view and from analysis on the ground, Rwanda didn't respect its point of view on the agreement because the M23 backed by Rwanda took so many areas in many areas, and right now they are trying to take control of the area of Uvira, which is an important city because it's a city which opens the Congo to the country of Burundi, and it's the nearest town to Bujumbura, the main city, and the former capital city of Burundi right now. This is what I can say about security and about on the ground. The Congolese army is still continuing to lose the ground in the area of in the South Kivu, and the M23 it at the last part to take the entire part of South Kivu, the entire part of the National Number 2, which coming from Goma and across Bukavu and went until the area of Uvira. Until this evening, the fight between the M23 backed by Rwanda and the Congolese army backed by Wazalendo and some Burundian troops still continue in the area. And right now, so many population are flying from Uvira and went to Bujumbura, trying to be in a place where they will have more safety.
That was journalist Akilimali Chomachoma in Kinshasa providing an update on the current situation in the DRC. And this was from the Friends of the Congo webinar yesterday, December 9, entitled Trump's Minerals Deal with Congo, What Happened? Now you're going to hear my conversation yesterday with Kambale Musavuli, analyst at the Center for Research on Congo-Kinshasa. And he's unpacking the DRC-Congo-Rwanda-U.S. Accords. Here is the conversation. Kambale Musavuli, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to unpack the DRC-Rwanda-U.S. Accords. First of all, I don't know if you could just go into the four major agreements. There's one which is the reaffirming of the June 27 peace agreement, which was signed again here in Washington by the foreign ministers of Rwanda and DRC. And then there was also the agreement on regional integration framework. And then there's a bilateral agreement between the U.S. and Rwanda focusing on health. And then the fourth one is also the strategic bilateral partnership agreement between the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, and the U.S. These are the four pieces that were signed, and I guess altogether make up what they call the Washington Accords. I don't know where you want to start before we get into the weeds, just to give us a summary of that and how the Congolese look at all this.
But even before looking at those agreements is to actually find out how did we get to have Washington, the United States government, negotiate peace in DRC. Should always remind the listeners, this is actually a process that started with President Tshisekedi earlier this year as the M23 was getting closer and closer in taking over the city of Goma. His government felt isolated, be it in the region or internationally. And Tshisekedi himself sent emissaries to Washington, to the Trump administration, offering Congo's minerals in exchange for peace. And in one of the letters that was disclosed, some part of the letters were disclosed by Africa Intelligence, it stipulated that the Congolese government is offering to the United States $3 trillion worth of minerals in exchange for peace and stability. So that's why we are where we are today, right? Tshisekedi actually making the appeal to the U.S. administration. But it's fascinating for us Congolese as we look at these four agreements. If we look at every single one of those agreements, be it the Declaration of Principles, the Regional Economic Framework, the Rwanda bilateral deals, and the global and strategic accord for DRC and American companies, it's only really about economics. It's about minerals. It's about who's going to make the most money out of DRC. And it does not look into account the history of the conflict, and also holding the perpetrator of violence accountable. Because for peace to come to DRC, right, there need to be a form of justice. We hear that as a cliche term, you know, no justice, no peace. For Congolese, it's very real. The reason why it's very real, for the past 29 years, right, since 1996 to today, millions of people have died But what we have observed in the killing and the deaths in millions in DRC is that those who are committing the crimes are the same people. And I always use the example of Sultani Makenga, one of the military commanders of the M23. Sultani Makenga was a rebel leader in the first rebellion of, that toppled Mobutu in 1996, the AFDL rebellion. Right? So he was part of AFDL. Sultani Makenga was also part of RCD, the second invasions of Rwanda and Uganda into DRC. After peace accords were signed in 2002 and a few years later, the soldiers who were integrating to the Congolese army, close to Rwanda, left the Congolese army and started another rebel group called CNDP. Sultani Makenga was part of that. Later in 2012, when the M23 was formed with a new name, Sultani Makenga was again the rebel leader. And imagine, as we're discussing today in 2025, again, the M23 rebel group, Sultani Makenga is still the rebel commander of the M23. So when I give you this historical narrative of what has happened in the past 29 years, one will ask, but how come this individual, backed by the Rwandan military, the Rwandan Defense Forces, continue to commit crimes? It's simple. It's because he has not been held accountable. So as long as we talk about peace in Congo, we are talking about justice. We will continue to sign peace agreement to peace agreement. But concretely for the so-called Washington Accord, it's also not the first time Paul Kagame has signed peace accord with DRC. You know, some will remember that in 2002, Rwanda and DRC signed agreements, right? Joseph Kabila and Paul Kagame, there are photos of them signing peace agreement. We know even in later years, there have been other agreements signed where even the DRC has invited the Rwandan military to operate in DRC around 2008 to go after the Hutu rebel force in DRC. You know, some participated in the Rwanda genocide, where Congo and Rwanda actually worked together to go after the FDLR. But today we are back at square one. So as we want to go into all the details of this deal, the Congolese people, the Congolese civil society actors, organizations, we are very clear. None of these accords, be signed in Doha, be signed in Addis Ababa, being signed in Luanda, or even in Washington, D.C., will bring about peace so long there is no clause on justice and accountability for the crimes that has taken place in the Congo since 1996 to present.
And I guess as you remind us of the history, it also underscores what the president of DRC just said yesterday. And I guess he was in front of the assembly speaking, accusing Rwanda of already violating the peace deal. And even Burundi has also come out to accuse Rwanda of hostilities on the DRC border, because Burundi's has sent some troops to support DRC. But if you can, so that, I guess it's like a continuation. It's like nothing has happened. And even like Kilimale Chamachama, who we just played his report just at the beginning of what is happening, is that, you know, there's still this hostilities, even though there's been an agreement signed.
The day of the signing, there were already violation of this peace accord on December 4th. On December 5th, many of us working in with the DRC received horrific videos of a massacre in Luvinge, the town of Luvinge, where populations were literally dismembered by bombs and killings, right? We saw populations fleeing, and it has continued since that time. So it's very clear that this agreement has no impact or effect on the peace and stability in DRC. But for Rwanda, this has always been the modus operandi. right? They always say the strategy of Paul Kagame of Rwanda is talk and fight, right? He'll go to peace accords, yet he'll be the first one to fire a bullet. And it's been even known in the history of the Rwandan genocide, where you see the day the planes were shot of the two African presidents of Rwanda and Burundi on April 6, 1994, it was the day of the peace accord being signed in Arusha, where these two presidents were flying. So we know, as it relates to Rwanda and conflict, particularly President Paul Kagame, he doesn't respect what he signs on paper. And the same is also true. We could get into the details of the President Tshisekedi and the regime. But the challenge that we're facing right now is the Congolese population is caught in a very vicious circle, right? A vicious circle where the government of the Congo is inadequate to address the challenges of the Congolese people. This is the government that's negotiating a peace deal with Rwanda without consultation of the Congolese parliament, negotiating the minerals sharings of DRC without the consultation of the Congolese people themselves, right? So totally against Congolese laws. But we also know that our neighbors, unfortunately, are continuing to support proxy rebel militias, but also sending their own soldiers on the ground. And I want to add one more element, because journalistically, it's okay to hear that journalists and media say that, Rwanda is, the Congo is accusing Rwanda, because it creates an impression that Congo is in conflict with Rwanda too, right? When we use the narrative. But what are the facts on the ground, right? I think for DRC today, in 2025, we have passed the stage of accusation and allegation. The reason why I say that very strongly is because the UN group of experts has disclosed evidence of Rwandan defense forces in DRC, the RDF, right? Photographic evidence, video evidence. This evidence was given to the Security Council, whereby the UN Security Council earlier this year passed a resolution, Resolution 2773, unanimously. Why am I pointing that out? It means that in the 15 members, three of them being African countries, all of them having seen the evidence of what the M23 is doing on the ground, what the Rwandan soldiers are doing on the ground with the photographic evidence and video evidence, all voted unanimously demanding that the Rwandan Defense Forces soldiers leave Congolese territory, that the estimated numbers of these soldiers were about 7,000 Rwandan soldiers on Congolese soil. So when we are at this level where evidence exists, we say it's allegation, or we say that Congo is accusing Rwanda, we've passed that. The fundamental question we should ask ourselves: if for 30 years millions have died and evidence exists of the situation in DRC, how come we refuse to hold Rwanda accountable? The answer is simple, right? That Rwanda continues to be a U.S. ally. This is why even Trump, in the process of the peace deal, is creating a framework where the belligerent country, Rwanda, is benefiting from Congo's minerals, which is bizarre, right? How come for peace in DRC to take place, Congo must share its resources, similar to what Trump tried to do with Ukraine, which hasn't worked? The engagement in Cambodia and Thailand, we're seeing also the effect of that. The same thing now is happening to DRC. So if we frame the situation in calling out the U.S. complicity in actually continuing to fuel the conflict by supporting nations destabilizing the DRC with evidence that they already have, and yet they refuse to hold them accountable. That's the stronger or the the strongest story to really lift up that will allow people to understand why the people of the Congo today are still fighting to have justice served to the people, even though a so-called peace accord or agreements were signed in Washington a few days ago.
And as you're saying, this is like what the Ghanaians would say, accident according to plan, which is just a phrase I always tend to use when we are discussing on this particular issue, because it's as you said, it's really, if it keeps happening, then we have to look at who's benefiting, who are the interest groups that are perpetuating it as well. So again, that's Kambale Musavuli, who is an analyst at the Center for Research on the Congo-Kinshasa. And we're unpacking the DRC, Congo, Rwanda, U.S. Accords. As you were talking, and that's what early on, before we got on the show, before we started having our conversation on the show, you reminded me of the proposal which in 2009, the former president of France, Nicolas Sarkozy, brought up to deal with the situation in Congo, which is, it's a peace plan. He was basically the same, as you mentioned, is using mineral wealth to deal with the issue on the peace. Well, disguising taking mineral wealth to deal with the peace. If you can expand on that.
Yes, and as we look at the Washington Accords, the Declaration of Principles, there is the Regional Economic Framework listed in Section 6. That talks about resource sharing for DRC. And we've always stated this is not something that's started today. You know, the first person who publicly said what we've known, that there is this plan of trying to control Congo's mineral wealth, and many have even gone as far as even calling for the Balkanization of DRC, where the eastern part of DRC will become even a country. So we've known this for years. But the person who verbalized it is Sarkozy, Nicolas Sarkozy, during his visit in the region in 2009.
I wanted to interject. Also, the other person who talked about splitting Congo into two was, remember, the Assistant Secretary of State for Africa one time. Yes. Not Chester Crocker, but Hank Cohen. Herman Cohen.
Yeah, Herman Cohen even said, yeah, I believe he said it even on Al Jazeera, that the Kivus belong to Rwanda. And it's very bizarre to hear a former Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs utter that that type of word that's not based or has ground in facts and history. But we could get into that in future interview. But for Sarkozy, specifically during his visit in 2009, he held a press conference where he actually said Congo should share its minerals with its neighbors, right? So when you hear him say that, and the framework that he was pushing was that for peace and stability in Congo to take place, Congo should share its mineral resources. Rwanda is a much more advanced country with access to markets, and everyone will benefit and people will put down the guns. Right? That's a very bizarre way to think about the conflict in DRC. Because when you frame it that way, it means that the conflict in the Congo is happening because Congo is not sharing its resources with its neighbor. And if that's the case, it means that it's confirming that the neighbor country is an aggressor nation, destabilizing the DRC for access to resources. Yet, rather than addressing that issue, we want to reward the aggressor nation with Congo's resources, right? So we're talking about millions of people have died because Congo hasn't shared its resources. So that's one framework. But when he shared this, Hank Cohen echoed it, and many other lobbyists have been pushing for this narrative that even during the uprising of the M23 in 2012, right when there was pressure to arrest one of their commanders, Bosco Ntaganda, who is now the ICC, we saw this narrative being pushed again. Because in 2012, militarily, the Congolese army was able to defeat the M23 on the ground with Commander Colonel Mamadou Ndala and other SADC forces were there, and they were able to stop the M23. But on the diplomatic front, Congo, Rwanda, including Uganda and a few other African countries, went to Addis Ababa to sign the agreement they call the Addis Ababa Framework Agreement, Accord Cadre in French. And this Accord Cadre, when you read it, includes a clause that speaks again about creating a regional marketplace for Congo's mineral resources, where nations in the region will benefit. And at the time, we also said the same thing, that this is very bizarre that this clause continue to appear in peace accord, that in order for peace and stability to take place, Congo has to share its resources. No question about Rwanda sharing its resources with DRC or Uganda sharing its resources with DRC, but it's the other way around. And today, hearing that again from Donald Trump, you know, in the framework that they are proposing for peace and stability, at least for Trump, he's being very honest. For those who followed the signing at the Institute of Peace, you will notice that Trump was very blunt in saying that we're going to make a lot of money. At least we can hear that from the U.S. president, that the interest is economic. But continuously pushing that, it's important to know where it comes from. No, it comes from a France, from Nicolas Sarkozy's framework for bringing about peace and stability. It did not work in 2008. It did not work in 2013. And definitely in 2025, bringing it under another name called Washington Accords, will still not bring about peace and stability because they are solving the wrong problem. And I usually say that, right? If someone has cancer and you give them Tylenol, that the cancer will not be cured. The person will not have a headache for a while, but the cancer will not be cured. So they're using the wrong prescription for addressing the conflict in the Congo. Because the conflict is definitely not about Congo not sharing its resources. Right? We believe in the ideals of Patrice Lumumba. We believe that Congo, as Kwame Nkrumah even also believed, is an engine that will help in the transformation of Africa. Its potential exists for the benefit of African people, but it should not bring death. Right. So if we are Pan-Africanists, and this is our belief, that Congo at the heart of the African continent is the engine that transforms the African continent, we should then ask ourselves, why are Congolese people dying in the process of resource exploitation? That's what happened to Patrice Lumumba as well, right? They want to make sure that those who live on the land have no say whatsoever on how these minerals will be used and for whose benefit, especially in 2025 when there is a global AR race, right? The Congo's resources, the lithium and the cobalt and the coltan, is so critical today for the artificial intelligence strategy. For anyone who's had a chance to read Washington's national security strategy of 2025, you will see very clearly that Trump is clear about securing access to critical minerals. And the critical minerals of DRC is being now, with this accord, controlled by the United States. So as we think about what is happening to the Congolese people, as we think about all these accords being signed, who is coming up with it, it's a fundamental, I'll say, a much more urgent call for Pan-Africanists and people of goodwill around the world to know that now, with the millions of dead, we must expose the system that makes sure that Congo's minerals continue to live, literally a penny on the dollar, while millions die, so that it could benefit the West and not benefit the people on the ground.
You're listening to Kambale Musavuli, analyst at the Center for Research on the Congo-Kinshasa, unpacking the DR Congo-Rwanda-US Accords. The music in the background is Blackbird by Donald Byrd, and we'll play that remembering Donald Byrd's birthday, which was December 9. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW, 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now back to the conversation.
As you said, the prescription is not the solution, because they know what would be the solution. And they, as you said, that when you talk about Patrice Lumumba and others, so the prescription is by design to not support the people, because their primary objective, as you mentioned, Trump has just been more open and honest about what the U.S. intention has always been in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And could you say by this being now exposed, as you said, this now a rallying cry for people in the Pan-Africanist community to take action. Do you think that now people would clearly understand what it's has always been about?
There are a few things even beyond DRC happening on the African continent that should wake up Pan-Africanists and people of goodwill around the world. No, one is this Washington Accords, right? That for peace and stability in DRC to take place, African presidents had to be summoned to Washington. And they showed up, right? They summoned Tshisekedi, they summoned Paul Kagame. You could see how they didn't even greet each other.
And that speaks volumes that they are summoned, sorry to interject, that they are summoned to come to Washington. That's a really, speaks a lot of volumes too.
Indeed. And they came. They actually came to Washington for that, right? But the second one, which I still believe is related to DRC, is what took place in Benin this week, right? What took place is that there was a coup, right? Now we're calling it attempted coup. And the president of France called an African president and provided the African president with military support to stop the coup in Benin. But the actions of the president of Nigeria, right, who received the support from Macron, is actually anti-constitutional. That the president of Nigeria cannot launch an attack on Benin without the consultation of the Senate in Nigeria. And he did so when a French president told him to do X, Y, Z, and he did, right? So when we're seeing that, the Pan-Africanists are looking at, say, why are we having this flashpoint across the African continent? And why do I keep telling people to go back to the writings of Kwame Nkrumah? He knew that we are living in a neo-colonial states now. He knew we don't control our currencies. He knew we don't control even how we choose our leaders, right? And he was grappling with that idea. How do we unite the African continent? Gave us a template and a model of how to unite the African continent, even making Kinshasa the capital of the United States of Africa. So if Kwame Nkrumah says that the capital of the United States of Africa is Kinshasa, and Kinshasa is not stable today, that should be the rally cry for Africans. I say, there is this hunt for Congo's minerals. They are telling us what the problem is. They're telling us it's an ethnic conflict. They're telling us that Congo is harboring rebels, destabilizing other African countries, and so on. There are so many stories that we can say about what the Western press has said about the Congo. But if you listen to the Congolese, right, it goes now to the point you said about solution. No, they don't know the solution. We, the Congolese, we know what the solution is. We know that if for 29 years we've been killed, those who killed us must be held accountable. So we know that the solution for peace in DRC, right, is justice. Especially even now that I've seen for the past few months, a wave of Africans, be it on the continent and in the diaspora, calling for reparation for slavery. I support that call. But I say that presently, there is another slavery. There is a genocide taking place right now. That if we don't address that aspect of the present and as well as the historical past, we will continue to be in a vicious cycle where we lose our lives and we lose our land in the profit of capitalist interest outside the African continent.
And again, that's Kambale Musavuli. He is an analyst at the Center for Research on Congo-Kinshasa. And we're unpacking the DR Congo-Rwanda U.S. Accords. And as you said, always making sure that we connect the present and the past. And I think that's why it's good when you when we're discussing, always reminding people of the continuation, that it's not something that just began yesterday or the time when this peace treaty was, these accords were signed, and these same instruments that were there during when there was colonization and enslavement. And of course, the neocolonial system are the same systems today. Because when you look at, even when you're talking about the Sarkozy and in 2009, some of the players he was involved with, all the big companies. Now, Congo, we flash forward, fast forward, Congo, the United States. You look at rich corporate moguls like Bill Gates, for instance, and others. If you could just remind people their interests and their role in this situation, which they've always been at the center of this crisis, these corporate interests.
I mean, I was ready to jump into the question you just asked, but a thought just came through my mind. And the thought was, what is the difference between the Washington Accord and the Act of Berlin, right? The Act of Berlin that covered up the African continent had an economic clause, right? It looked at the Congo as the Congo Free State, a place where you could get access to the resources without paying any taxes, right? But if you think about the context of even the Act of Berlin that covered up the African continent, and I think the signing of it was February 26, 1885. When we think about that agreement, they came under a pretext. And the pretext that they used was the Arab slave trade. Right? There was indeed Arab slave trade taking place in the eastern part of the DRC. King Leopold said, for humanitarian reasons, right, we must intervene in DRC to bring about peace and stability. Back then, you know, as I said, they called it Congo Free State. And they divided up the African continent, and each person got what they needed. But it still kept the Congolese in bondage. So if you think about the Act of Berlin, and now you move fast forward to 2025, with what Donald Trump has done, it's not fundamentally different. There is a pretext, right, of, there is a fight, there are rebels running. But in the process of dealing with the peace, they are adding a clause on mineral resources sharing. Not even just mineral resources in the Section 6. They even talk about national park management. One would say, what does national parks management have to do with peace and stability in DRC? How is that part of the clause? So these two documents should be looked at the same, that it still dispossesses the Congolese from the land. It takes away their agency, and it does not deal with the question of justice for the Congolese. But who is benefiting? Well, some of them show their faces, right? Bill Gates took his private jet and went to Kinshasa this year to sign a minerals deal, right? And that mineral deal that he signed is worth $1 billion for his mining company, He's one of the founders of a mining company called Cobalt Metals. They use artificial intelligence to find critical minerals operating in Zambia and DRC. And he just got access, you know, with the deal that he signed, to a mine that has a potential to provide, if run at full capacity, according to AVZ Minerals, to provide 12% of the world's lithium. That's the mine that today Bill Gates owns, right? Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos are the two billionaires behind Cobalt Metals accessing the minerals. Of course, there are many other companies. I'm hearing that there are American companies interested in taking control of the Rubaya mine. The Rubaya mine is in the area controlled by the M23 in the eastern part of Congo. The Rubaya mine is the largest coltan mine in the world, right? And a few American companies are interested in that. Eric Prince, the former CEO of Blackwater, is operating in DRC. He's brought in mercenaries also there. He's been also engaged in insurance in DRC. And I can go on and on, but we know there is corporate interests behind what is happening. And we know who's putting that together. The Massad Boulos, the special envoy, the State Department, who's leading the charge, reminding me of Harry Sanford, right? In 1885, another American who was essential for the signing of the Act of Berlin on behalf of the United States, right? That all this parallel in the end, they are the ones who are making money from the deal, right? Harry Sanford made so much money from the working as a lobbyist on behalf of King Leopold, and the money that he had, he was able to move back to Florida and settle in a land that's named after him, the city of Sanford, where many people remember the city of Sanford as the city where Trayvon Martin was killed, right? That is the same scenario now, that they have all these Americans who are sitting down, making these deals, are going to benefit from this blood money while not addressing the fundamental question of justice. But I'm still very optimistic. I'm optimistic because I follow the ideas of Patrice Lumumba. I remember the words that he put in his last letter, right? When he said that, to the last letter that he sent to his wife, that do not weep for me, my dear companion, that I know that the sons and daughters of Congo will not stop the fight until every single last neocolonial agent is removed from DRC. And the Congolese are always fighting, right? We know that it's a long struggle. We know we'll continue to challenge our government, the government of Tshisekedi. We'll continue to challenge the neighbor countries, Rwanda and Uganda, who continue to support rebel groups. We'll continue to challenge corporate interests, the Bill Gates, the Jeff Bezos, the Elon Musk of the world wanting to get access to Congo's resources. We'll continue to challenge foreign government, the United States, the United Kingdom, any nation seeking to destabilize and control Congo's wealth at the detriment of the Congolese people will continue to fight. And that until we have peace and stability in the Congo, we will always follow the words of Patrice Lumumba, that we must always live with dignity on our land, fighting for justice and accountability always.
And speaking of always fighting for justice and dignity, that's Congolese people have been doing throughout. Could you also highlight the main points which Congolese voices, which are not amplified enough? And as you know, as you mentioned, who are not even consulted by the whether it's the local government or external forces, what they're saying in terms of what the exact solutions would be. You did articulate some of them throughout the discussion, but if you could remind us to give us more proper context of what exactly it needs to happen now.
On October 1st, 2010, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights published a report that stated that what's happening in the Congo are war crimes, crimes against humanity, and possible genocide if proven in a competent court. This is the same body that's also have published a report on the genocide in Palestine. And in the report that they publish, that report on DRC is called the UN Mapping Exercise Report. It documented 617 incidents of mass human rights violation and violation of international humanitarian law. In that same report, it calls for few transitional justice mechanism. One of them, supported by the Congolese civil society, is in it, the creation of an international tribunal for Congo. And it's very important for the Congolese people because we believe, right, because people are not held accountable for the crimes they commit, because in peace accords they continue to give rebels amnesty, they will continue to commit crimes. So to end that culture of impunity and create a space for accountability, the creation of the tribunal is primer for peace in DRC. This is what the Congolese people have called for. Dr. Denis Mukwege, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate from Congo, also the doctor of Panzi Hospital in the South Kivu, when he received the Nobel Peace Prize, for those who will have a chance to go listen to his speech, you will hear that he makes that call, that it is time for the International Tribunal for Congo to be implemented. So I said that this was published in 2010, right? We are in 2025, 15 years later. There is still no tribunal, but killings are continuing. Even the taking over of Goma, at least 3,000 people were killed. In the past few days, hundreds have already been killed as well. So they will continue to be killed until there is accountability. So the voices on the ground as it relates to peace and stability in the Congo, they are not compromising. They are saying that we need justice and that justice will come through the creation of a tribunal. If it doesn't happen, we'll continue to have recidivism of these rebels continuously killing, blackmailing government, blackmailing the international community, bringing them to the table for them to gain some benefits while justice doesn't come to the Congolese. So that's what the people of the Congo have been calling for. That's on one level, on the justice level. The second one, which has been led by the civil society and religious leaders, has been a national dialogue, creating a space for all actors of the political life in DRC to have a say in the future of the Congo. This is something that the Tshisekedi government is not willing to organize, but the civil society have taken steps, going cities to cities, even meeting rebel groups, traveling across the world, and also in localities and communities in Congo to create that space. But for the mechanism, the Congolese are not waiting for the international community to see that happen. They are working toward it, and they want the world to lift up that story when they're speaking about, you know, initiatives. Washington Accord did not consult the Congolese people, as if there is no forum that exists where you can consult them. Right? The Congolese have called for a national dialogue, and they've been organizing amongst that. So if those two pieces are done, one, a framework for justice for the crimes that has taken place in Congo from 96 to present, if that's implemented, that will bring about peace and stability. And the national dialogue will provide the Congolese people with an opportunity to hold their leaders accountable and to also push forward leaders that they would like for them to lead them for the future. So those are the two points that I think is important to share about what the Congolese people want.
Kambale, thank you very much again for dissecting the DRC, Rwanda, U.S. Accords. And I know we'll come back to you for more information on this issue.
Thank you always. Thank you always.
You've just been listening to a conversation with Kambale Musavuli, analyst at the Center for Research on the Congo-Kinshasa. He is a human rights advocate and is one of the leading political and cultural Congolese voices. Kambale Musavuli was unpacking and contextualizing the DR Congo-Rwanda-US Accords. You can revisit the conversation on Africa Now's SoundCloud page. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. The music in the background is Babao Sunset by Manu Dibango, remembering Manu Dibango's birthday, which is December 12th. That's it for Africa Now for today. I'm your host, Muizo Muntali. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shainana Uzain Alamin, which looks at issues in Northern Africa and the Middle East, and that's followed by the women's collective Sophie's Parlor, which is followed by the Browder File with Tony Browder, which is followed by Sojourner Truth with Nana Ganvi, and that's followed by Kombitla Kai with Eugenia Charles looking at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on X, formerly Twitter. That's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host James Pope. And thanks to our engineers Michael Nicella and Claire Chapman. And thanks to our research fellow volunteers Shanda Koza and Funan Gonda, and the Africa World Now Project Collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan-Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Erdison. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW and to you for joining us. Continue to support Africa Now and all the great programs on WPFW during our end of the year pledge drive, which is next week, December 14 to the 20. We're going to leave with a closing song entitled Free Congo by Grandeur, Nino, Josman, Yosapa, Kalash Criminal, and Damsu. Thank you. Have a great day. Have a great week. And stay safe.
Orguez-vous, personne n'en parle. Il se passe des dingueries au pays de mes remparts. On pense à vous, je sais qu'un jour on s'y rendra. J'ai rêvé d'un monde meilleur sans caca, mais sans M23. Des millions de morts à l'est du Congo, et pourtant personne n'en parle. On envoie nos frères mineurs au combat, se faire tuer pour du cobalt. Toutes ces richesses nous font du mal, on n'a jamais demandé ça. J'implore le bon Dieu de me faire ainsi. C'est la guerre, je te fais pas dessin. C'est la guerre, je te fais pas dessin. Si j'en parle trop, ils vous trompent des sangs. Et nos mamans se font violer, ne rentreront peut-être pas à la maison.
Mon pays va mal, que mon peuple est révolté. Que les diamants profitent à l'Occident, je suis débordé. Je peux pas faire grand chose, écoute nos cœurs qui se brisent. Je me demande d'où vient le problème d'un pays aussi riche. La faute à ceux qui voient leur poche avant la société. Mais c'est l'humain, 70% craque pour le gros papier. Je demande la paix dans le monde comme une miss. Mais ma casa des mots me ramasse. Un peu d'humanité c'est la base. Tout n'est que vanité, tout s'efface.
Sors pas de dodo comme système à tanga. Soir c'est la veillée, des familles effrayées. J'ai le cœur endeuillé, parce que mon pays peu à peu s'effeuille. Faudrait qu'on se réveille. Sors pas de dodo, j'ai l'esprit à l'ouest. À cause de tout ce qui se passe à l'est du pays, les milices ne veulent pas lâcher du lest. Des millions de familles, des enfants y restent. Terre de richesse et de sang, sur ma terre de richesse et de sang. Les mines, les minerais, les mines, les minéraux, le même le numéro des crimes ignorés, malgré le sang de nombreux innocents.
Message pour mon pays, c'est le millième. J'ai pas la couleur de peau d'Eminem. Alors les GT vont pas s'agiter quand on me massacre pour des minerais. Congo Mbokaba papa, Congo Mbokaba mama. Mais à Goma j'ai vu des barbares. Les sapeurs ont des gilets pare-balles. Faut le cacamer, faut le condamner. Mais aussi faut reconnaître ceux qui dirigent le Congo. N'aime ni le Congo, ni les Congolais.
Des millions de morts au nord qui vous, personne n'en parle.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. President Trump was in the Poconos last night for the first step on a tour being billed as an opportunity to tout his economic policies. It quickly veered off, however, into a tirade against immigrants. To a cheering crowd, he said, quote, I've announced a permanent pause on third world migration, including from hellholes like Afghanistan, Haiti, Somalia, and many other countries, close quote. He added that, quote, why can't we have some people from Norway, Sweden, just a few? Let us have a few from Denmark. Do you mind sending a few people? Send us some nice people, close quote. Trump repeated false claims about Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, to which the crowd launched into a chant, send her back. Responding on social media, Representative Omar posted, quote, Trump's obsession with me is beyond weird. He needs serious help. Since he has no economic policies to tout, he's resorting to regurgitating bigoted lines instead. He continues to be a national embarrassment, close quote. In Washington, lawmakers advanced the 2026 National Defense Authorization Act. A final vote could happen as early as today. The bill locks in expanded military support for Israel, as regional analysts warn of mounting consequences for Gaza. WPFW's Noah Portner has more.
The bill will provide joint funding for U.S.-Israeli missile defense programs and anti-tunnel systems, measures the Middle East Monitor says will deepen militarization rather than encourage de-escalation. In fact, there is a section of the bill that states if other countries impose arms embargoes on Israel, the U.S. will be legally bound to compensate for these security shortfalls. In Gaza, where reconstruction is stalled, humanitarian groups fear that the bill will strengthen Israel's security posture and constrain relief operations further. Critics argue that the legislation signals Washington's continued prioritization of military backing over diplomatic pressure, narrowing slim prospects for stability even more. From WPFW and WBAI, I am Noah Portner.
And Democrat Eileen Higgins won the Miami mayor's race yesterday, defeating a Republican endorsed by President Trump. The win marks the first time in nearly 30 years Miami voters chose a Democrat to be mayor, and the first time a woman will hold the seat. Speaking to the Associated Press after her victory speech, she said, quote, we are facing rhetoric from election officials that is so dehumanizing and cruel, especially against immigrant populations, close quote. And the American Civil Liberties Union and the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit yesterday to obtain a copy of a secret memo drafted by the Department of Justice to legally justify boat strikes in the Caribbean that have killed at least 88 people. The lawsuit states, quote, the public deserves to know how the Trump administration has justified the outright murder of civilians as lawful and the grounds on which it purports to provide immunity from prosecution for personnel who carried out these crimes, close quote. The Trump administration says the strikes are necessary to stop the flow of drugs into the U.S., but critics say they are tantamount to war crimes. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Good afternoon, this is the Shai Rana Show with your host Zain Al-Amin. This is a show that focuses on Arab culture and politics, and it airs every Wednesday for 1 hour at WPFWFM.org and WBAI-FM. BAI-FM. Good afternoon.